welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host, Casey Ruff, and today we have another amazing guest to introduce to you now. Robert Verhelst, better known as Fireman Rob, helps people become greater assets to themselves and others, with the ability to lead with courage, passion, and mental strength. Fireman Rob delivers powerful impact to the people and audiences that he coaches through his stories and catalysts that have been forged in the fires of his life. From numerous years in the fire service, to surviving on Discovery Channel show Ultimate Ninja Challenge, to performing search and recovery after the September 11th attacks, Rob has demonstrated how to live a courageous and meaningful life. He is the author of the book Forged in the Fires and the host of the fantastic podcast by the same name. He continues inspiring the global community through his work as Fireman Rob, where he speaks, delivers trainings, competes in Ironman races in 50 pounds of firefighter gear, breaks world records, and delivers bears to children in hospitals throughout the globe. His clients range from community groups to colleges to Fortune 500 companies, including 3M, U.S. Bank, Southwest Airlines, ATF, Timex, USA Triathlon, and Kraft. Robert, what an honor it is to welcome you to Boundless Body Radio.
Oh, Casey, it's so great to be here. You say all those things and I get tired.
We always offer our guests, if they want us to read the introduction one more time, we can do that. So if any point during this interview,
I'll be falling asleep if I do that.
It's great, man. You've accomplished a lot. It's pretty amazing. I like to start off our podcast on a lighter note, but this time I want to start off on a very serious note. And this is going to change the entire tone of the podcast. When I say you deliver bears to children in hospitals, are we talking the teddy variety or are we talking the grizzly variety? Because this conversation could go...
Well, only the grizzly only goes to the ER, so that they're ready for it.
They're ready, got it.
Yeah, it's all teddy bears. It's the softest teddy bear that you can get. And we've delivered, I think at this point, we've delivered over 7,000 bears in 48 states in the United States and four countries.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I was just thinking like, man, what a jerk this guy is bringing bears to these poor kids in hospitals. They're already down on their luck.
You got to have both ends of the spectrum.
That's great. That's amazing. What cool work. And I definitely want to talk to you about that. Before we do, I want to hear your story. I mean, you are doing what all of us said we wanted to do when we grew up, which is be a fireman, which is not necessarily the case for you. Can you tell us how you got into the work you do?
Yeah. So it's crazy. You know, my whole life has been focused around helping others and being in those kind of career fields. I was a lifeguard, you know, being a fireman, teaching classes for CPR, doing all these things. And realistically, my childhood, I was always in sports. I swam all the time, great family life, and went to college and I played water polo and I played basketball and really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And firefighting kind of fell into my lap as something that was like dynamic. It was kind of like athletics in the way that you're constantly having to push yourself. You're constantly having to be better than something that you don't know what their best is. And I think that's the great thing about firefighting and why I got in it was that dynamic atmosphere of from call to call, from day to day, you have no idea what's going to go on. And it's the family aspect is the other great thing is, you know, I have a family at home, but then I also have a family at the firehouse that is there for me every single day and is there for me in the toughest of times and the best of times.
I've heard that from a lot of firefighters that you really do become a family with the crew that you end up spending so much time with. I'm sure it's either like pure boredom or pure like adrenaline and kind of oscillates between the two.
Yeah. It's a fine balance of both because you have to, you know, we're there for 24 hours with the shifts that we do. And, you know, we have a lot of comedians, we have a lot of just fun things. We cook two meals there. And so it's, you know, it is literally like you're at another home, except in between, you know, having dinner or working out or doing some training, you're going out to a car accident on the interstate or a house fire or somebody who's having chest pain or, you know, somebody who stubbed their toe. That's the only difference between home and work.
Oh, that's great. And you are firefighting up in Wisconsin. Is that correct?
That's correct. I've been at the city of Madison since 2000.
Yeah. Gotcha. That's amazing. How difficult was the training initially to become a firefighter?
You know what? I went through training through Madison Technical College before to get my Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2. And a lot of it really comes down to it's muscle repetition, but at the same time, it's being able to mentally just endure the pain and the struggle that you're going through. Because even you could be the greatest fireman out there, but it's still going to be challenging for you. And that's the crux of all the training is like, we can train to our best of our abilities. We could be the strongest and toughest and most endurance firemen. But at the end of the day, the situation can take advantage of you. And that's what we really train to do in the fire service is all that training is to get you ready for the worst circumstance possible. So you don't freak out and you are able to adapt in that situation.
Wow. Interesting. You had such an interesting experience very early on in your career. I believe you were doing firefighting for a year when 9/11 happened. Can you tell us a little about what the circumstances were with you?
Yeah. So I had just actually started on the city of Madison and barely in a year. And September 11th happened. I was actually working shift that morning. I was getting off shift that morning after a 24-hour shift. And we actually had a fire that morning. And when we got back to the station, as I was up in the showers, I heard on the radio that one of the trade towers had been hit. And, you know, didn't think really anything of it. And then when I came downstairs to get some coffee, and actually I was a rookie at the time, so I was pouring coffee more than I was having it. And I went down there and I saw on the TV that the other trade tower had been hit. And, you know, at that time I was part of a rescue team and got called up. And a day after the, you know, trade towers had been hit, I was driving to New York City. And subsequently I was there doing search and recovery after that.
Wow. I don't know how difficult this is for you to talk about. I've heard you talk about it in the past. Can you describe what it was like while it was there?
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. 20 years ago, and it's still one of those things, and I've given many speeches on it, but it always brings it back up. And it was like a movie scene. Really, that's the best way that I remember it in my mind is you get there and it doesn't look real. And I had been to the trade towers before they got hit, and I knew what that area looked like. And so as soon as I walked onto the pile and started working, that's when your mindset just starts to go and you just start to do what you need to do. You know, there was concrete, there's just voids all over the place. There was nothing organized about the rubble. The best thing that was organized was the people that were there. I've never been a part of something. As I step back many, many years, I look at how organized that was and how there wasn't anybody that died in the search process. There wasn't anybody that got seriously hurt in the search process.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
And that's amazing to me. You know, that amount of rubble, that amount of just sheer, I don't even know if you could say power that was sitting on that rubble, that's an amazing fact of that.
Wow. The one thing I hear pretty consistently from people who are there is just the temperature, the heat. Was it incredibly hot around the buildings?
No, I don't even remember the heat. I don't. Wow. I have the concrete dust smell. I have terrible, every time I smell concrete dust, that just sets me off. That's one of my mental triggers. But yeah, no, realistically, I had a jumpsuit on the whole time, a helmet. And I was sweating the whole time, obviously, but that was more from work. I didn't realize the heat. It was just, I think there was never nighttime there because the lights were just so bright. It was like a Hollywood scene.
Wow. Interesting. Were you successful in recovering any people safely? I mean,
No, that was by the time I got there, especially with how the towers fell and everything. At that point, we were doing a lot of recovery, trying to see. I mean, there was in the back of our minds, we were hoping, you know, everybody did was. And reality was not something that you needed in your mind at that time. So doing bucket brigades, tunnel rat. It was not anything that was enjoyable to me. Yeah, wow. As I'm thinking back right now, I mean, I wouldn't change anything, but it did change my life a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Wow. Wow. What an experience. How many days did you end up spending there?
I was there for 8 days consecutively.
Wow. That's a long time.
And yeah. So, and then we were doing like 22-hour shifts, and just sleeping on the pile when you could. And yeah,
I don't really recall. Were you guys able to make a dent in that much time, or was there still just a tremendous amount of work to do?
There was a lot of work to do. I mean, in that amount of time, we were, it was, what was amazing about the precision of the command system is that they gridded out that area very quickly. And they had many USAR teams that were working in tandem with other rescue teams and with the FDNY, with the NYPD, all the different units to be able to take apart those grid systems, search those grid systems, and then they'd have the heavy machinery come in and remove that and then take it over to the processing place where they even sifted through all of it even more. And so, I mean, the amount of coordination was just staggering, especially after all the loss.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to me, that's unbelievable.
Wow. I can't imagine what you would have gone through emotionally to be in a spot where, especially so many of your brothers in the firefighting world had lost their lives, you know, doing such a great task, but like you said, not much enjoyment in doing the task. How difficult was that trauma to face for the rest of your life?
Yeah. You know, you don't get a day off from it. And it's one of those things where you just constantly look, and I know a lot of people who struggle with PTSD and depression from that. They're always looking for meaning to try to grab some understanding of what is going on, because that's what our minds want. That's what our minds need. And to this day, I haven't really ever grasped any understanding of why that happened or what happened. And that always just, it eats at me every single day. And in different ways, I mean, from being angry to being completely exhausted to, you know, procrastinating on everything that I'm doing, to just being melancholy. Mm. And there's so many people that are going through this, and it's partially understanding your emotions and your feelings and just accepting them. You know, accepting that, for me, I'm always say I have to accept that I'm going to only be 3/4 full my rest of my life. And that's okay. Mm. And it's a hard statement to make, but it's one that I have to make to rationalize, you know, getting through the day.
Wow.
And so that's, and there's, I'm one of probably, you know, thousands of individuals who have the same feeling, and some are living in silence and you never know.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. One of our former guests, Kushal Choksi, wrote a book called On a Wing and a Prayer, where he talked about his experience when he was in the mezzanine level of the North Tower when it got hit. And
oh, wow.
The pandemonium that happened, the security guards telling people to go to the center of the building, not to go outside because there was so much debris, you know, people ending their lives by jumping out of windows, all of that. And he describes being the very last person to jump literally from the dock to the, you know, the ferry boat that was heading out to Weehawken away from Manhattan, where he saw the second tower collapse. And he experienced obviously an amazing amount of trauma as well, having gone through that moment. Which led him later on in life to discover sky meditation. And, you know, he shares his message about how meditation can help with traumatic events and things like that. Did you find there was any kind of mindfulness technique per se that helped you along? I know it's something, it sounds like you still deal with every single day, but was there something you found that helped you?
I think the biggest thing that I found that helped me, and this is going to sound really odd. For many years, I struggled with it on my own, and being in the career field of the firefighting, it's one of those fields that you don't want to show weakness. And for mental health and firefighting and police and, you know, EMS and dispatch, it's a big problem for us because we hide a lot of that stuff, and so we don't take care of it. We're very good at putting it in a closet and leaving it in that closet and compartmentalizing so that we can get on with our day. A lot of people call it putting on a mask. So for many years I did that, and then went through many therapists, and finally I went to a therapist that he was just flat out honest with me and told me, you know, knock off telling me the 10,000 foot view, tell me something real, Rob. And so I started talking with him a little bit more, and one of the days he said, I know you can handle this. I'm going to tell you it, but I'm proud of you for not killing yourself yet.
Wow.
And I looked at him, and that was the first moment in my life that I felt power in my life again.
Wow.
Like I had done something right. It sounds terrible. A lot of people go, oh my God, how could he say that? It's like to different individuals. And as you start to understand individuals, you start to understand how they tick, how they move, how they think and process. And for me, that was the process of thinking, I actually have done something okay.
Wow.
And so then after that, it was me more reflecting and starting to think about things that I was doing not as good in my life, but maybe things that were fundamentally distracting me from being the best person that I could be. And that's really where it came down. I didn't do much meditation or mindfulness, but I did a lot of just reflection of in the moment. Like if I did something, I'd be like, okay, wait, I can't blame anything else on this. Why did I do that?
Hmm. Wow. That's really powerful. Was there ever any doubt that you would do a different profession?
Yes. I've sat and wanted to do other professions, and you sit there and you go, I just can't handle anymore. And for me to say that on a podcast is hard because, you know, other people in the fire service, they go, oh, well, you shouldn't be in it then. That's not true. You know, we all have our struggles. We all have our challenges, especially in this service. And I have looked at it, and am I looking forward to retirement? Yeah. Oh yes, I am. It's one of those things. It's like you put in your time and you put in your service, and you know, the best thing that I can do is finish up my career and give all of the knowledge that I've gained to the next firefighters that are coming up through.
Wow. Well, I can just say thank you very much for your service. I so much appreciate the people that see the fire and run towards it versus running away from it. I'm sure it's something you never really fully get comfortable with, right?
Yeah, you have to have a healthy level of fear. You know, if you go in thinking that you can stop everything, that you know everything, that's the one you're going to get in trouble. That's when you're going to, you know, kill yourself or kill somebody else going into there. You have to have a healthy level of fear that you don't know what the fire is going to do or what the accident's going to do, but you have confidence in yourself that whatever comes at you, you're going to be able to deal with it and handle it.
Mm, that's amazing. I think that ties in directly to, you know, some of the physical performances you've done in the fitness world. There's always some level of fear there, right? Like you could fail at any of these things that you decide to take on. You kind of bite off more than you can chew, and that comes with the level of risk. And I know that some of the tasks that you've set out to accomplish have worked and you've been able to do them and struggle through them, and others have not. And you have to kind of deal with that. And I think both of those things have some level of fear. Is that correct?
Oh, it's completely correct because, you know, so many people stay within their comfort zones and, you know, everybody says, you know, life lives outside of your comfort zone, but it is true to that aspect of if your goals are only goals that you know how to reach to, if they're in your arm reach or they're goals that you've already accomplished before, but you're like, hey, I'm going to do it again. It's not really extending yourself. It's you're comfortable with being comfortable, and that's fine. We need people like that in this world. But if that's something that doesn't sound appealing to people, they need to go out there and be okay with falling on your face or being, you know, humiliated in front of thousands or millions of people because you tried something nobody else has tried. And yeah, trust me, I've done that many, many times in my life, but it's okay because at the end of the day, I'm looking to live a life of value and not a life of success. Success is medals and trophies and accolades. Those are neat, but those can go away in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
If you live a life of value, that whatever I did when I'm racing triathlons in my full fire gear, if there's two or three people that took something away from that now they're living their lives a little differently. That's the value that I'm looking for. The medals, you know, they hang on the wall and I have to dust them. It's not, it's just like the Guinness World Record thing that hangs on my wall. I just have to dust it every week or so. that's the value of it.
Wow. I look back at any like bike race that I ever won and it was always just so fleeting. Like that day you felt amazing and you won. And it's like the next day you were back to zero. There wasn't anything like really lasting or meaningful about that.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the journey that you got there. And I think that's where a lot of people miss a lot of the value in life is that the journey that they took to get to that podium or to get to that second place or third place, or even just to get there, that's the value of your life. I mean, you took time out of your life to invest in yourself to be able to try to achieve something. And that's what people have to look at, not what the finished product is. I always say that my favorite part of the race is a mile before the finish line, because that's truly where you know that you've done it. The finish line is just a party, but that mile before the finish line, if you know you can get there, that's the pinnacle.
Mm, yeah, I love that. Something you were saying before reminded me of one of our former guests, Tanya Streeter, who is a world champion freediver, 526 feet under the ocean on a single breath. Can you imagine? Crazy, nope. Crazy, not at all. But she said, like, if you don't test your limits, if you don't push your boundaries, you will still have limits. You just will never know where they are. And it's only by challenging yourself and pushing yourself outside of your boundaries will you ever know where those limitations lie.
That's truer words have not been said, because if you think about limits, you know, as we grow up through our lives, and when you're kids, your limits are what your parents tell you. Those are your limits. When you grow up and you become your own person, your limits are dictated on the people that are surrounding you. So if we never have our own individuality, if we never have our own beliefs or thought processes, or, you know, if we all were identical, we would never push the limits or boundaries. I mean, there's a reason why the Guinness World Record, it's not an infinite pages of book, because there's a lot of people that just use the limits of others to go through life. And for me, that's for me and my kids and my family. It's like, that's not an option.
Yeah.
It's not an option.
Wow. That's very well explained. I really appreciate that insight. I want to talk a little bit about your interest in triathlon, but before I do, I need to read you rule number 42 of the Velominati rules. These are rules that every cyclist should absolutely live by. And they relate to how you should wear your clothes, what time you should show up for team rides, like all the different things that you need to consider as a cyclist. Rule 42, a bike race shall never be preceded with a swim and or followed by a run. Later in the rule, it says, also keep in mind that one should only swim in order to prevent drowning, and one should only run if being chased. And even then, one should only run fast enough to prevent capture.
Oh, that is beautiful. That needs to be a shirt.
Totally. 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 How did you get so interested? Yeah, I do too. The bike's the funnest part. Tell me how you got interested in triathlon.
You know, pretty much most of my life I've been around athletics, and triathlon was something that combined like three different sports that I loved, you know, going from swimming. I've been swimming since I was, you know, 7 years old, 6 years old, to cycling, which is really how I got around as a kid, to running, which is not my strong suit. That's why I put on fire gear so then I can walk really slow. it's one of those things. Like I got into the career field of firefighting because it was dynamic, and you get into triathlon because there is no two similar races out there. It doesn't matter if you could race the same race 4 days in a row and it'll be exactly different every single time. And that's the fun part of it. I loved it. And the community is great. Endurance community is great. And it was just a different challenge for me.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing. Tell us the story of you deciding to wear your fire gear while doing the run. That sounds incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it was not the smartest decision I've ever made, but so the 10th anniversary of September 11th was coming up, and Ironman Wisconsin was going to be the 10th anniversary. And being in Madison, I was like, you know, I got to do something for this. And I was trying to think of something, because at that time I wasn't really talking about what happened at 9/11. And I was giving more of the overview of, you know, most of the stuff. And I wanted to do something that I didn't have to talk to people about or tell them what they should feel. I just wanted them to see it and take something away from that day. And so that's when I came up with doing the full run portion in my fire gear to commemorate all those who lost their lives and all those who are still struggling with the memory of that day. And I tried it out actually at half Ironman Racine. So I did half the distance, a 1.2 mile swim, 56 mile bike, and a 13.1 mile leisurely stroll. And that proved to be a tough one because it was 110 degrees with the heat index that day.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. So I got through the swim and the bike fine, but then got onto the run and I'm just sitting here just struggling, going, this is stupid. Why would you do this? And along the path, I always talk about, you know, your strength is in your passion, understanding what your purpose is and your why. And along the path, a retired FDNY firefighter who was doing the race came over and gave me a hug and said, thanks for being out here. This is what we needed. Mm. And it reminded me to stop whining and stop complaining about the heat and being tired and just keep going. And that's really been my whole existence with this triathlons is the number of stories that I've heard from individuals, number of people that I've been able to impact without ever knowing their names. That's been so valuable to me. And for the races itself, you know, I sat back and I actually reflected on why I do these. And I came up with something that wasn't all that appealing, but the pain of the race actually made me feel I was still alive. It's a strange way to put it, but it made me feel I was still alive and still going through in life. And that took me time after I stopped doing them for a little bit to realize that.
Wow. That's so interesting. I mean, you mentioned earlier that, you know, that there's something you have to overcome when you take on athletics, but I strongly believe that taking those things on just makes you so much more resilient for the other stressors in life. Would you agree?
Oh, completely, completely. Yeah. Resilience isn't something that we're given and it's not something that somebody can bestow upon you. It's something like we were talking about before. When you go outside of your comfort zone, that's when you start to build your resilience. You don't get your resilience, you start to build it. And sports is a great aspect or avenue to be able to do that because you're constantly winning and losing. You're constantly having bad days and you have to get up the next time and do it better than you did before to try to win. Some seasons you may not win a single game.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you quit.
Mm, I love that. What an amazing lesson that you know, sports and fitness activities can teach us. For somebody that doesn't know, I hear these terms thrown around a lot. People say triathlon and say Ironman, and they don't realize like the different distances and lengths. There's many kinds of triathlons. Can you educate the listener on like the different lengths of each of these?
Yeah. Yeah. So an Ironman, or like you can call them full distance as well, is a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and a 26.2 mile run. And then a half Ironman or a half distance is a 1.2 mile swim, a 56 mile bike, and a 13.1 mile run. And then they have what's Olympic distance, which is just a lot smaller than that.
Yeah.
So you have Olympic and sprint, but yeah, that mainly I did half and fulls.
Gotcha. Yeah. So just for the listener, like I've done one triathlon in my life. It was a sprint and I thought I was absolutely going to drown doing the swim. So I have so much, dude, it was bad. It was everything I knew was going to happen from coaching people. And I didn't practice enough in my wetsuit. And like, I was walking along the shore at one point because I was like, my heart rate was totally jacked. So I've got tons of respect for swimming 2.4 miles. That's a long ways.
It's a long ways. I that was actually my favorite part of the whole race.
Really?
Wow. I was a swimmer for my whole life. And then I was in the United States Air Force and I did some swim water confidence training and played water polo in college. So it was like, that was my fun.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, if you played water polo, I guess you're used to getting the shit kicked out of you in the water.
Exactly. Oh, it was a water polo mat. And as you go, this is that same adage that we were talking about. As you go and do many, many of these, you start to understand how the flow of it goes. And so I would always go on the outside whereas everybody was trying to cut the corners or trying to go right next to the buoys, and I'd be on the outside, and it was like, I mean, it was like a leisurely swim for me. Mm. There was nobody around me. Wow. And I was maybe going maybe 0.1 more than they were.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. So explain to the listener some of the difficulties and challenges that you face doing the run portion, whether it's a half or a full, in full fireman gear.
You know, it's the hardest part is getting to the point when you, so getting through the swim and the bike, because I had to give myself at least, I love to give myself about 8 hours left. So there's 12 hours in a full distance or an Ironman triathlon, you have 12 hours. And so I'd always love to give myself at least a good amount of time to finish. And the hardest part with all of that was, is that I, once I got off that bike, I knew it was going to be painful. And the first mile is always great because you have all the cheering and everybody's there. But it's then when you get on that lonely miles of that 10 miles and 11 miles and 12 miles, and you go, I still gotta do 13 more. Ugh. And not only was it the physical pain of the helmet weighing down, you know, it's an 8-pound helmet that I'm wearing the whole time. The turnout coat and the turnout pants, they don't breathe. So underneath them, I actually have to wear spandex because otherwise you get some sweet chafing from the fire gear.
Yikes.
So I'm just completely encapsulated. Plus I have my air pack on that's about 35 pounds or so. And so just trotting along, and I'm always constantly looking at my watch. I'm constantly trying to keep my mind active by figuring out what time I'm at and what pace can I go. Or, and some races I've had to run in my fire gear, which is not advantageous at all. But realistically, looking back at a lot of those, you know, it comes down to your mind. Your body can do a lot of things, but your mind is going to actually be the one that is going to push you to that point, like we were talking about, to find resilience and to find what your truest potential is.
Mm. I love that. I love that you mentioned earlier that it's all about the journey and the training and not necessarily about those events, but all of it builds that resilience that you were talking about to be able to just continue, take one step in front of the other. Tell us a little bit about the world record.
Oh, I don't even know how I did that.
Did you intend to from the very beginning?
I did. I had a crazy, I'm pretty much one of those guys that has crazy ideas all the time. And it's like, hey, let's do this. And then let's figure out how to do it. I wanted to do something big and wanted to do something that was going to push the envelope of, you know, what people thought was possible. I always love this. One of the Walt Disney quotes is, it's kind of fun doing the impossible. That's what he always used to say. Hmm. And for me, that was going for this Guinness World Record for the most number of half Ironmans in 1 year. And when I applied for it, I was like, can I get a, you know, different record put out there for doing in fire gear? And they're like, no, you have to, you know, we can't make a separate record for that. You have to break the one that the guy made in full spandex gear, you know, like the stuff that is super easy to do it in. It doesn't leave anything to the imagination. So I had to beat 22. In 1 year, and while still working as a firefighter, while still doing speeches, while still having a family, while still trying to just maintain myself and figure out what I'm doing, all these things had to come into play this whole year that I was doing this. And you know, I signed up for 26 because I had a feeling that there was certain ones I weren't going to go. But eventually, like, I had to add on two more at the end of the year because I had a few that, you know, I'd get there and the race would be canceled, or I'd get there and the distance was different. And so there's so many different factors that came into play that I wasn't truly prepared for, but I had to deal with in the time.
Wow. Wow. I mean, just logistically, doing one triathlon is a logistical nightmare, especially when you're getting up to those half iron and full iron distances. There's so much to consider, and you got to ship your bike around and travel somewhere. And, you know, I'm sure that all of those events are not evenly spaced out throughout the year. Like, they had to be crunched into, you know, spring, summer, fall, correct?
Yeah, there was ones that I would do back-to-back weekends. There was one that I tried to do, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, and that didn't work out well. But you know, I had some great people that helped, you know, Tri-Bike Transport that helped me out. Scott Safety helped me out. Craft, you know, all these things. It's always funny because my name is on that certificate, but at the same point, it's so valuable for individuals to understand that we don't get to do the things we do without supporters behind us. You know, you can't break world records. You can't do the impossible without somebody helping you to get up that first ledge, or, you know, continue to climb or give you more rope to be able to climb higher. So, you know, for me, it was so many different people throughout that year, and including my wife and my family, who sacrificed that whole year so that I could do something as silly as get a Guinness World Record.
Mm. What was the hardest moment of the whole thing?
This is a hard one. The hardest moment of the whole thing was, so I had had everything planned up so that I would tie the world record here in Wisconsin at Ironman Wisconsin. And that didn't come to fruition because of all the changes. So I actually broke the Guinness World Record in Texas. I had one of my best friends there, but there was nobody else there. My family couldn't come or anything like that. So it was kind of I crossed the finish line. My one of my great friends in the world was there with his family, but it was kind of lackluster. It was like one of those things where it's like, okay, now I got to go home. Mm. So it was a great high moment, but at the same time, it was one of those moments where you go, okay, I get it.
Mm. Gotcha. Did you ever try to accomplish another world record, or are you good for now?
Yeah, I tried to do another one about 2 years ago in Daytona. I tried to walk in my full gear for 24 hours. I finished 44 miles. I had to get to 50. There hadn't been a record, but that was what they said should be the record. So I had to get to 50. You know, who knows? I may try it again. As I get older here, I've got to pick and choose my battles better. And but I went out there and tried it. I think that was one of the things. It was like you said early on, is, you know, you can sit back and be comfortable, or you can go out there and test the limits. And if you fail, you fail. But people are going to see that you went out there and tried.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that message. It's so, so valuable. Tell us about your book and the process of writing. How did that come to be?
Oh, that was, you know, it was interesting. So I started speaking, and I kept going, gosh, I need something that I can give to these individuals for after, so that they can not just take away like that one Tony Robbins moment, like, we're going to go this weekend and we're going to be excited. And then the week after, you're like, okay, now what do I do? So I wanted to put something together that is functional for individuals to write in, to make their own. And at the same point, they can continue to take away the message that I was trying to give to them, and have them implement whatever they need in their life. Not everything's going to be for them. And I wrote the book so simply that you can jump around in the chapters. There's no, like, the flow is the seven catalysts. But you can take away whatever you need from that on whatever day you need. And that's the way I wrote the book. And the process was fun because it was stories from my life. And that's why the seven catalysts exist, is because it's not like I invented, you know, them, their passion and purpose, ownership, decisions, emotional control, resilience, faith over fear, and mental strength. I didn't create those words. Those words were just something that I pulled from my life and my stories of my life to go, these are all things that I needed to continue to move forward and to push the limits and to be able to get a Guinness World Record, or be able to, you know, continue to survive PTSD.
Yeah, sure. I'm so glad you mentioned the seven catalysts. I was hoping, I know this is a big question, but I was hoping you could maybe briefly go into each one of those things and explain why it's important.
No, definitely. So I always say, you know, your strength is in your passion. So if you can understand what your purpose or your passion is, it's so much easier to start to move forward. That way you can start to take ownership in your decisions, your indecisions, your words, your actions, all of those things. Because once you take ownership in them, now you're going to start to make decisions. And I always say there's two different types of decisions. There's strategic and tactical. Tactical are in the moment decisions. They're the things that get you to the next roadblock. Whereas the strategic decisions are that overarching huge goal, like the Guinness World Record, where my tactical decisions were, I need to do this race in Florida this weekend. Once you create those decisions that make sense, you have to have emotional control in the moment to not be distracted by individuals or anything that is surrounding you to be able to continue to move forward. That's really going to lead you to resilience in your life, in your decisions, in everything that you're doing. Like we said before, you're going to start to gain that resilience. That's going to lead to having faith in yourself over the fears that surround us, which inevitably leads to mental strength. And mental strength is what's going to get you through the day.
Wow. That was a perfect explanation.
I've never done it before.
No, I could tell. First time. Yeah. Knocked it out of the park. First time. Beginner's luck, whatever.
Beginner's luck. Yeah, there it is.
No, I absolutely love the concept. And it makes a lot of sense when you explain it so simply. The one flows into the other and they all build upon each other. I really love that concept.
Yeah. It's fun to reflect on your lives. And I always tell people to do their, you know, go into their life and see what words associate with what you've done in your lives, because it's so powerful to be able to tell your story. You know, it's tell a story, make a point. It's so powerful when you tell a story and you kind of give that person a little inkling of, hey, well, this correlates to resilience, or this correlates to, you know, clarity, or whatever it is. It's so much more powerful. Mm.
Yeah, I love that. We all know that in 2020, everybody, including myself and my wife, started a podcast. You started a podcast in 2020, but you did it in January. So basically, you knew the pandemic was coming. You didn't tell any of the rest of us. Thanks a lot.
Nope.
pretty cool that you started the podcast even before the rest of us did. Tell us why you wanted to start a podcast.
Yeah, you know, I had... throughout my journey, I've met so many amazing people. And a lot of times, you know, you hear podcasts, and at that time, there was podcasts that had like all these like top level people, and they really weren't going with the people that maybe nobody has heard of, but has a better story than like a Steve Jobs. And I wanted to give people stories from like, in essence, the front line, stories from people who had resilient mindsets, and not just in one category, but in a multitude. I have everything from Navy SEALs to ATF agents to business coaches to CEOs all over the place. And I love it because it gives you perspective of what different mindsets can bring to your life, because not every episode will resonate with everybody. And that's what I always tell people. It's like, it's not the one-stop shop. It's, hey, come in, listen to a few. You're going to probably really listen to some and go, oh my God, I could take that away. And then some you'll go, yeah, I can't really correlate to that. But that's what, you know, I think the podcast world is all about. And I love it because there's so many different perspectives that you can take into account and understand differently how people function. And that's really why I wanted to put that podcast out there, is because knowing all these people, I was like, they should have a voice out there too. Mm.
I absolutely love that. It's so interesting. When I look back on the episodes that we've done, we've landed some huge guests in the nutrition world where I spend a lot of my time. And it's amazing. It's so amazing to talk to some of these people you're totally starstruck by. You've been following their content for so many years. And it's really an amazing opportunity. But I learned kind of the same thing, that it's amazing to interview the big people, but it's also really, really amazing to find the people who are doing amazing work in their little corner of the globe that not everybody is talking about, and give them the opportunity to share their story. And generally speaking, they're so excited. They're so passionate. It's almost, it almost creates better content.
Yeah. Oh, you're so right. And it's not content that has been told over and over and over and over and over. You can still feel the absolute excitement behind what they're saying, because they're like, yeah, somebody finally recognized that my voice is good.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. No, that's amazing. When you look back on some of the episodes you've done, do you have like a few standout moments or people that you've talked to that really inspired you?
Whew. I know I've always gotten this question, and you know, it's hard to say, because just like I was saying before, there's so many different key points from different people that I'd have to say it's just a multitude. I mean, it's a conglomerate. I've done over 100 episodes and it's just, I've been honored to have these people on. Like, I can't even pick one. It's terrible. I know
it's hard. No, it's hard.
But it's one of those things where I listen to all of them, and being in the moment with those people when I'm doing the interview, it's amazing the stories that we have in this world. And it really, I love doing the podcast because it brings to my mind all the things, crazy things that go on in this world, from the pandemic to war to all those other things. I get to interview these people and I understand why we are still good as a country, why we are still good as human beings. And it's because of individuals like these people and people that you've had on your podcast as well, that they continue to thrive in this world and they continue to inspire others to do the same. And I just love it. I love it. I love the platform and I love the ability to do that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's amazing too. It's really such a cool way to be in creation space. Like, you know, we are recording this. This didn't exist 46 minutes and 15 seconds ago, and now it does.
Yeah, exactly.
And people will download this, not just today or next week or next month, but for years. It's something that has been created and can be shared on for, you know, an infinite amount of time. It's pretty awesome.
I love that. You hit it on the head. That's exactly the way to think about it. It's like you can, and it's for all time. That's the other amazing part, is like you can immortalize people's stories, you know, for their kids' kids, so that they can listen to it and go, oh my God, that's my grandpa.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. No, I love that aspect of it. So speaking of podcasts and podcasting questions, I have three for you. Hopefully awesome. These three questions sound familiar.
I love it.
I hope you've thought about this before. What is one piece of advice that you would give to your 18-year-old self?
I love, oh man, you're my favorite podcast host. You know, I would say mental health is a daily habit. As an 18-year-old, you think that you can conquer the world. And for me, my life has taken so many different turns in the road that being able to talk to myself and talk to myself in a positive manner has been the biggest thing that I've learned in my life. And so making sure my 18-year-old self starts to do that and starts to do that in a positive way is probably the biggest thing I could tell them.
That's amazing. If I would go back, you know, 18 months when we first started this podcast, if you'd have told me then that the vast number of episodes where we covered some aspect of mental health, I would have been stunned. I thought we would have just been talking about working out and nutrition, and that was basically it. But it seems like this is so prevalent and so important and needs so much more attention. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah, it's something that I think we spent so many years researching what the physical body needed, that we didn't understand what the mental side of it needed. Yeah. And it needs more than the physical needs.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, that was a very good answer. Second question.
Casey, you want to know something funny? So one of my favorite answers I ever got from that, I can't remember who it was, but he goes, you know, Rob, I think my 18-year-old self would look at me now and go, why the hell are you right here right now?
That's like, good.
That's a good answer. That's the best one I've heard.
That's good. Oh, I love that. And knowing my 18-year-old self, I wouldn't take advice from anybody anyway. So yeah,
exactly. Exactly. You're sitting here going, all right, I don't know.
Totally. And for the listener, these are the three questions that Fireman Rob always uses in his podcast, Forged in the Fire, and gotten some really great answers. So I really love the questions. So let's go to question two. We all have struggles and difficulties in life. So what are two habits that somebody could apply to become more successful?
You know, first habit is take time every single day to reflect on the day, finding out what the positives were from the day, and also what were the negatives and how they came about. I think the reflection is a huge thing for individuals. Number two is, and this kind of correlates back to that 18-year-old self, is give yourself at least 30 minutes a day for yourself. it's so critical in this stressful world and all the things that are going on for us to continue to just work and go, oh, man, I just don't feel like I'm getting ahead, or I don't feel like I'm connected. Give yourself, and I know a lot of people say 5-10 minutes, but no, it's about 30 minutes. Whether it's working out, whether it's walking, whether it's sitting, you know, doing whatever you need to do, take 30 minutes a day for yourself.
Mm, yeah, I love that. When you talk about the first thing you responded with, the reflection, is there a particular way that you will do that? Do you do any writing? Are you journaling? Anything like that?
Yeah, so I do both my videos and also I do some journaling. So when I journal, I actually don't write because it's been studied many times that when we write, we try to do it perfectly. Whereas if you just do a voice dictation, you actually get the truth behind what you're trying to say. Hmm. And that's always the greatest way to either, you know, write a journal or start writing a book, is I always say do voice dictation, because you're actually going to get the meat instead of just the bone. And, you know, a lot of times when you type, you're like, oh, I got to put these words perfectly. It's like, no, just get your thoughts out there and then change it.
Wow. Interesting. I've never considered that perspective. I always do dictation, but I always thought just because I was lazy and I didn't want to sit down and write, I could dictate out on a walk.
Too. I mean, let's be real. It is part that.
No, that's interesting. That's very interesting perspective. Before we go to the third question, we need to put this into context. What is the difference between a firehouse table and my kitchen table?
So firehouse table is actually, when we go there, we solve problems. So everything gets laid out on the firehouse table. I mean, from, you know, relationship problems to the world problems to everything. But the coolest part about it is everybody is so honest there. There's nothing that's held back. There's nothing that's left behind. Whereas a lot of times at any other table, or, you know, you have some reservation. You may not say everything that you want to say. You may have some secrets. At that firehouse table, everything is on the table.
Mm, I love that. Okay. So thank you for putting that into context. Question number three, if you could have three people, dead or alive, together at a firehouse table, who would they be and why?
Oh, I wasn't prepared for this one. you know, gosh. So I lost my dad to cancer in 2019. And every single day I missed him. And he was... he was a strong part. He was there for when I did the Guinness World Record and was always that guy that was that last mile. He was only at one finish line ever. He was always there at the last mile to make sure that I knew that I'd gotten there. I'd love to sit with him and just have more conversations because I miss him so much. Let's see. I think, you know, another person that I would love to sit with, and this is kind of a different individual. You know, I'd love to sit with David Goggins. I think he's a unique individual that his life story has not been straightforward, and he still constantly is continuing to adapt himself. And I'd love to have his perspective. And the last person, this is... I think this is from the time frame, but George Washington, the way his thought process, I love history. My dad loved history. And the way George Washington helped to create what we still use today, it's mind-boggling, 300 some years later. But like his thought process of won the war, but then also at the same time, after the war and creating what we did, I'd love to hear his perspective. So it'd be an interesting group. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful answer. You always ask a follow-up question. Who would drink the most coffee?
No, I would. You. I would not let Goggins touch any of the coffee because I can only imagine him on coffee.
Scary thought. Scary thought.
By far.
Well, again, difficult, you know, losing your father. When I lost my mother back in 2006, I would have answered that question the same way. And the conversation, I don't know if you feel the same way. The conversation would not need to be anything substantial or important.
No.
It just like, shooting the shit kind of thing. Just you know, what's going on in life and maybe some simple advice or something. It wouldn't have to be this big, important conversation. Just the day-to-day stuff. We very much take for granted when we have those conversations with our loved ones around us.
And you hit it on the head, because I think it's so, you know, I have three kids and I tell them, you know, it's like, you may get annoyed with me talking to you all the time, but at some point I'm not going to be around anymore. And whatever you found annoying, you're going to miss. Mm. And, you know, that's same with my dad, is like just the little conversations. I still have his last voicemail and I still have his number in my phone. And so I always see it. And it's just like, you know, it's, you miss those opportunities to just tell him how the day went, or tell him what's going on, or just ask his advice on something. And, you know, that's gone now. And it's like, shit.
Yeah.
You know, how am I supposed to navigate this now?
Yeah. Very tough. But also such a helpful and useful reminder to all of us that life is precious and fragile and over before we know it. And to, you know, that's how death becomes such a wonderful teacher for us.
Yes.
And helps us really appreciate life, because otherwise we would just throw it all away anyway.
Have to
talk about your foundation. Tell us a little bit more about the work you do with the foundation.
Yeah. So the Fireman Rob Foundation, what we do is we deliver teddy bears to children's hospitals throughout the globe. That we have a simple acronym that we put is, it's called SMILE, Simple Moments Impact Lives Every Day. Mm-hmm. And realistically with this foundation, it's been amazing, because what we do is, individuals will send, you know, they'll give a $200 donation, and each bear, shipped is $10. And so they'll get 20 bears. There's no administration cost. It's just me. So there's no administration cost, anything like that. What we're trying to do is get people to be involved. And it's been amazing the number of people that have continually come to me and say, hey, we'd like to deliver some bears. Okay, great. I've had some CEOs that have donated and taken the bears to the hospitals with their kids to show them stuff. And that's the power of what I wanted to create with the foundation, is to make sure that every single dollar that goes in goes out to delivering a smile to a child.
That's amazing.
I've gotten emails from direct messages from parents that I didn't deliver the bears, but they said, you know, thank you so much for the bear. My son or my daughter held on to it, and the entire time they're at the hospital going through tests and everything like that, it helped a lot. I mean, that's what all that we can hope for in this world is to do just a little thing, and to be able to help others be able to deliver those, that's even a greater accomplishment.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. That so much reminds me of the starfish story. I'm sure you're familiar with it, with little girl on the beach.
Yep.
You know, throwing back the starfish, and the old man comes up and says, you're never going to be able to rescue all of them. What difference do you think you can make? And she chucks starfish in the ocean, said, well, made a difference to that one. I think that's such an important thing to remember. What a wonderful thing you're doing. I'm sure you have lots of different stories of lives touched through the foundation.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, and I always tell people when they deliver the bears, you know, whether you deliver them to the front desk or you get to deliver them to the individuals, at the end of the day, it's about what you're doing. And a lot of times you don't see the rewards or don't see the benefits of it, but understand in your heart that you did what you needed to do at that moment.
Right. Right. And such a lasting impact. I still have the teddy bear from my childhood. You know, they last for a long time, you know, I can be passed down to the kids, and it's just so special.
They do. And it's, you know, and it's just awesome. The people that either donate or and the companies that actually contribute to, and we have a lot of fire departments that when it comes Christmas time, we'll order bears and they'll deliver them with Santa Claus and all that stuff. And it's awesome.
That's amazing. So cool. This has been such a great conversation. Definitely lots of nuggets of wisdom. I wonder if you had one simple tip that you would like to distill down for the listener that they could take from this conversation and apply in their lives. What would that be?
I would say, understand that life doesn't get any easier. You're just going to get stronger when you follow your passion. So go out there and live it.
I love it. Wow. What a great message. Fireman Rob, where can people go to find you and connect with you in your work?
They can go to firemanrob.com. There's everything on there. It's almost too much. but I've got some, you know, great things coming out in the summer with some online academies for people to take more information, but it'll all be on firemanrob.com.
That's great. We will link to that in the show notes. Like I said, Fireman Rob, this has been such an amazing, inspiring conversation. You have accomplished so much, and not just accomplished those things, you know, for selfish reasons, but to spread a message and really help empower people to change their circumstances and change their lives. We're just so grateful for everything you've been through, and we're very grateful for you taking the time to be on our podcast today. We really appreciate you.
I appreciate it greatly, Casey, and keep doing the great things that you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And this has been another episode of Boundless Body Radio. As always, thank you so very much for listening to Boundless Body Radio. It's really inspiring and amazing to see some of the reviews that we have been getting, and also to receive so many messages and emails about how these episodes have improved our listeners' lives. And so thank you so very much. We are so happy to bring these episodes to you and provide them for free. And we really hope that they help you in your life. We have just passed two major milestones, which is absolutely mind-blowing to me. And basically, we did both of these in pretty much the exact same day. We have just passed 100,000 downloads worldwide of Boundless Body Radio, and we have just launched our 250th episode, which is absolutely amazing. Like I said, I never imagined we could reach that many people. We always want to keep you updated on things that we're doing on our website. So if you go to myboundlessbody.com, you can always see what we're up to. This month, we have a link that you can go and schedule a functional movement screen, which we do virtually over Zoom. A functional movement screen is a series of 7 different movements and 3 different clearing tests, which is designed to find weak links in the body, such as muscle imbalances and joint stability issues. It's a really great tool for discovering inefficient movement. And even if you're not experiencing pain in certain areas of your body, it's something that can prevent injury later on. Some muscles need to be stretched, some need to be strengthened, and we can help you create a plan around that so that you can stay healthy and continue to move well for the rest of your life. So again, you can go and schedule that at myboundlessbody.com. You will also see the other services that we offer. You can always schedule a complimentary 30-minute consultation with us to really chat about anything that you like. And remember, if you are enjoying Boundless Body Radio, please take a minute, give us a rating or review on Apple. It really helps get this passion project out to other people. And thank you again for tuning into Boundless Body Radio.